The show is brought to you by Books & Co. Main Highway, Ōtaki, your local independent bookshop. Welcome to Books Aloud. Today I'm joined by author Riley Chance. Welcome back to Coast Access Radio. I first interviewed you, Riley, after reading your book Weeping Angels, which I loved. And this next book, The Target, certainly has not disappointed. Another gripping thriller. Riley, congratulations on the book.
Thank you. It's great to hear the feedback, and great, you know, you enjoyed it, which is one of the reasons I write, to, you know, to entertain. So,
well, I never used to be a massive fan of thrillers because I used to get so terrified with them. However, I have changed my tune because this one, even though it's a thriller, it's one of those ones where you have to continually, I'll just read another chapter. I love that about a book. I love the pace of the book. So before we get too much into the book, give me your elevator pitch for this latest book, The Target.
Right. So one of the reasons I write is, I mean, I call it fiction with a social conscience. So I try and introduce some part of society that I think we probably need to understand a little more about. And in this one, it's the union movement, something that's been, weakened pretty much in New Zealand society over the last 40 years. And so what I hope people get out of the book is they get entertained, but also, you know, some of those questions might stick with people, you know, why are unions good or not or something? So, you know, adding to the debate.
I really enjoy how you brought in fact into the book. So this particular fact, without giving a huge amount away of the plot of the story, you bring up and weave into the story the unsolved bombing in Wellington in 1984 in the Trades Hall. And that, you know, I certainly haven't thought about that for a long time. And it just makes you very sad to go back and think about that poor fellow who picked up that suitcase. And so what gave you the idea of weaving that into your story? What sort of came first? Chicken and egg question here for you, Riley.
Yeah, it's a great question. The 84 case has always sort of sat in the back of my mind for some reason. I don't know why. And the actual Trades Hall is now a small museum to the trade union movement and that 84 explosion. There's the Ernie Abbott Memorial Hall that you can actually still book. And so it was such a pivotal moment, I thought, because the snap election occurred maybe 3 months later when Rob Muldoon called a snap election, Labour came in. So all that time was sort of just a fascinating political time, and just showed how much, because so the government at the time spent quite a lot of advertising on, you know, anti-Labour, anti-union movement, blaming the unions. And, you know, the argument is the result of that was someone being tipped over the edge to try and, you know, blow up the union members effectively. So just to show what political rhetoric can do. And we see it now, don't we, in the States, you know. Yeah. You say immigration's a bad thing and suddenly people are getting shot on the street. So that particular episode in New Zealand history has always sort of sat with me, and I kind of love diving into the research of it and then bringing it into the modern day to say, actually, could it happen again? Yeah, absolutely.
And so did you have that story in mind when you decided to look at The Target, or were they somehow merged together when you were thinking about introducing this or having this former US agent, Marla, kind of a little bit on the run, shall we say?
Yep.
How did you weave those two together?
I had the scene in mind and so I went to the combined trade unions, which is now in the building on Bulcott Street, and, you know, sort of stalked around it thinking I'll probably get someone who's going to report me for loitering with intent. And I just sort of thought the scene and to sort of reflect back to that unsolved crime in New Zealand, and for a lot of people too, you know, it's 1984, it's, what, how long ago is that? Is that 40 years now?
I feel old now, Riley. I was an adult
exactly.
Then.
And a lot of people, Yeah, I was going to say a lot of people haven't actually. You say the trades hall bombing, and a lot of people go, "Oh, I've not heard of that." So what I hope is people will go back and go, "Oh, so what happened then?" You know, because it has appeared in the news every now and again on the on an anniversary or a certain event, it comes back up again, and yeah, it still sits there as these sorts of things can happen in society. And some of the stuff that we always, it's one of the reasons I wrote one of my other books. I said, you know, there's a bit of a logic that goes through us. Oh, it can't happen in New Zealand. And suddenly these things are happening in New Zealand and have happened in New Zealand, and we kind of gloss over them.
I like being a Wellingtonian as well. I like reading about Wellington because you don't get a lot of it, certainly not in this sort of a format in this thriller series. And of course, this particular program gets podcasts, and it is goodness knows where it goes. You know, it can go, it goes to the States, it goes wherever. So it's actually really nice to know that people that aren't necessarily from Wellington are reading this book. Where are you located?
I'm based in Palmerston North, so just up the road a bit.
Just
So,
up the road a bit. So you're quite familiar with the actual streets of Wellington because you describe it so well in the book.
oh yeah, I mean I've worked a lot in Wellington, and yeah, and what I do is I tend to in all my books. So there's action in Picton in this one as well,
Yes.
and I go down and I walk where my characters walk and I take photos and go, okay, this is what they would see. You know, and so it's realistic. It's if it takes 5 minutes to walk from A to B, that's how long it takes in my book. Rather than, you know, if you get that stuff wrong, people suddenly go, I can, you know, that's 50 minutes. You can't cover it, you know. And so I like to bring the realism in and to base it in sort of like a real society, but it's slightly, you know, near future. So.
So what then was a particular moment or image that all of a sudden sparked that central plot? What came first, the 1984 bombing, or you wanting to introduce this US agent into the story?
Okay, so the US agent, this is book number, I think it's five, but four have been published. So she's featured in them previously, and I always have to remember when I'm writing that people new to the book have to be able to be introduced back to the characters. So yeah, so she was always sitting there, sort of ready to go in the in that series. And the 84 bombing, yeah, it was weaving it around, and the way I write, I tend to write. Without too much structure, and then, you know, then you've got to sort of weave it back around, sort of thing. So all these characters, and they take a life of their own as well, which sounds a little bit crazy, but you know, you start. Stephen King said it. You know, you put people in interesting situations, and you start writing and see what they do, and they do tend to do things. You know, so Grace, my journalist character, will do things that you think, oh yeah, that makes sense, but I never had intended that, and you go off on a tangent. So it's kind of. Yeah, that doesn't answer the question. It's kind of blurred and mixes all in.
No, I understand that, and especially, you know, after reading Weeping Angels as well, it's actually quite interesting to see. You can actually read those books independent of each other. Like, it's a book you can just pick up and read it. But for those, then maybe we might give people a taste of what you've written before. Tell us a bit about your writing style and how you sort of came up with this sort of series.
So I used to teach a paper at university. It was called Tutura Mai, which from the Māori song Tutura Mai Ngā Iwi, you know, stand together. And that was a lovely paper to teach. It was about how citizens can change society. And yeah, and just in those conversations with 20 and 21-year-olds, we had a lot of fun, and seeing how people saw the world in different ways. And I just suddenly thought, I can actually, I'd like to write into this. You know, into the space, if you like. And if you write a book that's based, so my first book was that I published was called Surveillance, which is about the rise of surveillance technology. It creeps up around us. We don't have a public discussion about it. We're not saying, is this a good thing? Is this a bad thing? But over time, facial recognition technology comes into supermarkets, comes into banks, you know, vehicles, all these things. And you go, well, what we should probably have a discussion about that. And if you just wrote a sort of like a documentary type book, it wouldn't sort of resonate. It would resonate with the people who are already in that space and not the people who might not be. So fiction is a way, I think, to bring. I mean, it's like a, you know, fiction for me is like a movie where people go along, but they're, you know, confronted with other things in the movie as well as the story. There's things that, you know, you go away thinking about. And that's what I wanted to do. And yeah, I wrote one and I put it aside and it's still unpublished. I still quite like it too. It's But I thought I'll, you know, I wasn't sure. So I wrote one, then I wrote another one. I wrote Surveillance was my second book. So
And what is coming up next? I normally ask this question right at the end, but because you're talking about this series of books, is there something else that's working away there in that brain of yours?
there
Or is
is
it written?
there is indeed, and I've just about, the way I write for 3 months. Every, you know, 800 words a day is the goal. I don't always get to 800 words a day, especially when I get busy. But so I'm just about finished the first sort of collection of it. And this one's, I haven't got a title for it yet, but it's set in New Zealand in 2048.
Oh, dystopian kind of.
And yeah, well, I'm sort of treading a dystopian, utopian sort of line. But yeah, it's really interesting to imagine. You know, where does surveillance technology, where does all these things, where does our democracy, what does society look like in what is what, 22 years' time? And so, and you can play with that because often, I mean, I used this previously, but when in The Simpsons, they put Donald Trump in as prime minister, and I think about the year 2000. And it wasn't that Matt Groening wanted to be right, it was a warning that. If you let things happen, the absurd can happen, you know. It was a warning, obviously, America didn't, you know, take. And so some of the things that I'm playing with, and so, you know, imagine a scenario, and in this case I can spoiler alert, put my dear old Palmerston North doesn't really exist anymore because, you know, two catastrophic floods and insurance industries now won't cover houses, and that's all it takes really to make a place. You know, change it dramatically. And it's not that I want Palmerston North to not be there, but I want people to take that, you know, this climate stuff seriously. It's this is what can happen. You know, it's, as I say, there's that lovely thing, oh, it can't happen, you know. And it's like we tend to see the current state of things as being very solid and, you know, they will be there forever. And of course, but history tells us that things change and they change quite dramatically. So, yeah.
Well, as we're recording this interview, it's early May. The interview won't come out till early June. But as you know, recently we've seen cars floating around in the ocean and being whipped down rivers, and looking like something out of a crazy war scene of cars being taken. I didn't think I'd ever see that happen, and
Yeah,
that was
in
only a few
Wellington.
weeks in Wellington. Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah, and so the idea that a flood could go through, and recently we've been seeing insurance companies talking about not insuring houses, and I mean, and once a house can't be insured, I mean, it almost loses its value as a saleable item. Not many people want to buy a house that might be on a floodplain that you can't get insurance for. It's just a massive roll of the dice. And so that sort of, and yeah, and you do those things and suddenly people will move, they'll be forced to move. And so, and we will, I guess we will see that unless, yeah, unless we can turn things around. And we're not really, are we? That's the thing. I mean, we're
No,
not doing a lot.
we don't seem to be. And then it all gets ties in with economics as well. So it's a bit
Yes,
of a,
absolutely.
yeah.
Yeah.
Did you always, I'm going to take you back to the characters now. Did you always know how your characters would unfold? Did Grace or Marla surprise you with some of the things they got up to?
Yeah. Going back to the must be the second book. So I've got a lovely literary agent up in Auckland, Jeff Walker, and so when I the first draft of Surveillance, I sent it up to him, and he thought there was some good, a lot of good stuff in there, but he said these characters, you know, they would work much better as women than men. So originally it was John Marks, and I can't remember the agent's name, and so I had to rewrite them. And so yes, it was, yeah, that was, and it was fun to do because you can't just obviously change the name
Yeah.
because they're completely different characters, they do different things, they have different experiences, and so yeah, and so treading through those through, effectively through someone else's eyes and shoes was yeah, it was an interesting process. And so, and you come quite attached to your characters, you know. In fact, in this one, the target, I was thinking of actually, you know, killing one of my characters. Yeah, exactly. And in the end, I couldn't quite do it. And yeah, it's, which is, it sounds so strange, doesn't it? It's like, you, of course you can, but yeah,
I know what you mean, and I, as a reader, also you get quite attached to these characters as well. So I was a bit worried there, in a few spots. I think maybe that feeds into the thrilling part of the book. If you're always a little bit worried that you're potentially going to lose these characters, your readers are also can potentially be a bit worried as well.
Oh yeah, look, I don't always like happy endings, and we've all probably read books where you've gone, no, no, that you can't have done that sort of thing, and I quite like that. I don't do that probably as much as I would probably do in the future. My 2048 book does give me license to do that. And spoiler alert, but in 2048, I mean, the book hasn't been fully written yet, but so it's it's Grace Mark's son looking back, and it's a cold case murder of a journalist. And so, but that's all I'll say for the, but yeah, that's how the sort of the plot goes, trying to unpack what happened there, but set in very much in a 2048 New Zealand.
There's a strong sense that things aren't always what they seem in the book. How do you approach building that suspense and that misdirection? You send us off on some wild goose chases.
Yeah. I don't quite know that. It's just you have to write. I mean, they talk about having the reader as one of the other protagonists in your mind. I think Bryce Courtney wrote that. He was very influential for my writing. So thinking that, you don't need to tell the reader everything. They can bring what their experiences are, and it's making sure that reader, you're treating them as a very much as part of the thing. So if it's obvious to the reader, then that's probably not going to work. You have to make it so that the reader is, and that's why I guess that questioning. So the union movement, I try to make it, it's there, but it's not, there's not an overt, message there, but my characters will have different opinions of that. And hopefully that will get to the reader as well. And they can make up their own mind on where they sit in that. It's a balancing act. And sometimes you do have to have other people read it and go, no, I saw that coming.
Yeah.
Or no, I didn't see that coming, which is obviously what you want. You know.
Were there any particular challenges in writing the story and the scenes?
Yeah, just making sure that the bombing and the union scene made sense, because I can imagine, we're coming up to election, so it was set coming in an election year, so and making sure that it was was realistic of what could happen in New Zealand society in the coming. Could the unions be blamed for the economic woes of the country? It's harder now because they've been marginalised, but I can still imagine it. And then taking stuff from history is always fun. I did when the Prime Minister speaks, and I never name the Prime Minister in my books. I leave that again to the reader, can either put the current one in or, can read and say there's a different one. But yeah, there was a speech in 1951, which I basically, it was from when the lockout, the waterfront lockouts, and there was a bomb that went off actually on a railway line up in Huntley, I think. And so that's where they called the state of emergency. And so I used a lot of that. And so it's balancing the realism with the fiction. But I like the realism bits because you go, well, I love it if someone goes, well, that's not, that's not very realistic. And you go, well, it actually happened in 1951. So,
You sit in on at the Beehive quite often.
I love going to question time. Yeah.
Oh, it's question time you go to. Fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have my opinions of who I think you're talking about there in the book. The book is only just being released as we're talking. Have you got feedback from Kiwis, and have you got feedback from anyone overseas about, say, Weeping Angels or your book so far?
Certainly in previous books, I get it's the frustrating thing is you get very positive feedback from people who read it. But, like most authors, I'm up against getting books in bookstores. It's really hard. If you go into a bookstore, there's piles of books that draw attention, and it's really hard to compete with that. In fact, I learned a long time ago, there is no point in trying to desperately get one copy of your book into a massive bookstore, into one shelf at the bottom of the fiction. It's just nobody's going to go there. So I see myself as a bit of a guerrilla marketer. So for this launch, I've got a launch coming up. It's a drop-in launch. It's at the local community arts centre, Square Edge, who have been absolutely lovely. And they've let me have a little display as well. So with my very good friend Warwick, who's a photojournalist, we found the copy of the March 28 Evening Post of when the bomb went off.
Oh,
And
wow.
so we're going to put that in a frame, put a suitcase. I found an old suitcase in a secondhand store underneath it, and a few other bits and pieces, so people can, so it's about why do I write, and hopefully people will be drawn to it, and the display can stay for a month, which is really nice, rather than, you launch it. Sometimes it is a little bit dispiriting. You try and launch a book at 6 o'clock in the library, which I've done in the past, and the library people are so wonderful. They're always so helpful. But if it's a miserable day, miserable evening,
No one's
hardly
coming
anyone
out.
turns up, you
Yeah.
know. And you put all that effort in for a 2 hour little, and you just, yeah, it's a little bit soul destroying.
Yeah.
And so I keep trying different things. Like for Weeping Angels, I launched it on the street outside our lovely local bookseller, Bruce Mackenzie's. And that didn't work very well either. I just got bailed up by people who were very, what's we say, a couple of conspiracy theorists
Oh.
thought I needed to ever be told about the world. And I was, as you are, I was just trying to be nice and say, please move on though. But
They've
yeah,
ended up in, as characters in
you
your
live
next
and learn.
book. So
True, true.
tell us then, where can people get the book? So it'll probably be, hopefully it'll be in our local bookstore, Books and Co. But how can people get hold of your book?
Certainly, it's at Bruce Mackenzie's now. I know that. And the lovely thing is, I write books to be read, so they are in the local libraries now, I see, so which is really good. People can go and get a copy. But I always tell people, look, go to your favorite bookstore and just get them to order a copy if it's not there,
Yeah.
because that's the easiest way. I mean, I don't like selling. I like my books to be sold through bookstores purely for the fact that that whole ecosystem, it's quite fragile. And so, getting people to bookstores is a good thing.
Love it. I'll just give people a little bit of an idea of the book. So this is The Target by Riley Chance. She was in the wrong place at the wrong time, or was she? Former US agent Marla Simmons is hiding in a quiet South Island town, hoping her past never finds her. With an election looming, journalist Grace Marks is covering the escalating union protests, and someone is tracking her when a bomb rips through the Wellington union offices, echoing the unsolved 1984 Trades Hall blast. Grace is caught in the explosion. The official line that it is the work of a lone extremist doesn't add up. With security cameras everywhere, identifying the culprit should be easy, but the police and SIS investigations stall. And it goes on. Marla must decide, was Grace in the wrong place at the wrong time, or was she the target? A gripping New Zealand thriller. Someone planned this explosion. The question is why? That is the latest book from Riley Chance. Get yourself hold of a copy of that. Support our local writers. It's a really good read. I love it. And I'm looking forward to the next one. Riley, thanks so much for joining us here at the station.
Oh, delighted. Always wonderful. And always, it's always great to talk about writing and books. So yeah, thank you very much for having me on.
Oh, it was a joy to have you. Thank you so much, Riley.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.
This program was sponsored by Books & Co. Main Highway, Ōtaki, your local independent bookshop, stocking a huge range of quality books for all ages, including the best of New Zealand authors. Books & Co. Main Highway, Ōtaki.